Jason, let me start off by talking about what's on a lot of people's minds around the country. Our president famously said, if you like your plan, you can keep it. If you like your doctor, you can keep it, period. And then on October 1st, with the rollout of the Affordable Care Act and the exchanges, about 4.8 million people across the country had their policies canceled. How about explaining to our listeners what happened and why?
I think the president, of course, regrets that he made those remarks after the fact that the bill passed and was enacted, because it's true that those who had health plans in effect before the bill was enacted from that date, March 23rd, 2010, all of those plans were grandfathered, which means they are not impacted by the provisions of the ACA. But plans that came into effect after that date up until today, the president and others in the political world continued to use that same slogan, if you like your health plan, you can keep it. And it doesn't apply to people after the date of enactment. So within the scope of the law, there are 10 minimum benefits that every health plan must offer. Things like pharmaceutical coverage, hospitalization. It also includes pediatric care and maternity care, and things that a lot of people don't have in their current plan because it doesn't apply to them or they weren't interested in paying extra to get those services. But every plan now under the law must have those services. So in Florida, there's hundreds of thousands of plans that needed to be upgraded. So these aren't people who were going to lose coverage, but under the requirements of the law, all insurance companies, Florida Blue included, had to comply. We had to offer all 10 minimum benefits. So we sent letters to the people impacted to say, we're going to move you into a plan that we think is the most effective plan for you, given your circumstances, and still compliant with the law.
Now, Jason, you mentioned the grandfather clause, but in the press conference last week, the president mentioned that the grandfather clause turned out to be fairly narrow and ineffective. And why did he say that?
I wouldn't say it was ineffective, but it was narrow from the perspective that was 4 years ago. So how many people still have exactly the same health plan that they had 4 years ago? Many, but there are hundreds of thousands that don't. And for that group that has a plan that looks different today than it did in March of 2010, they're going to be required to buy the new upgraded plans under the terms of the law.
Well, Jason, the uproar caused by loss of plans led President Clinton, among others, to say we need to do something. And last week in his press conference, the president very dramatically last Thursday stated, we have a fix. This fix will extend into next year. And what he said was is that for insurance companies who had canceled policies, that they were going to allow insurance companies across the country to actually extend those canceled policies for a year. And one question is, a lot of insurance companies and a lot of insurance commissioners around the country didn't know what to do next. And the question is, what was Florida Blue's response to that action of the president?
It was pretty clear that public sentiment was trending in a way that this change had to be made. Whether it was made by the president or the Congress, somebody was going to step forward politically and say, we're going to allow these plans to continue as they currently are written, at least into next year. The determination was made to do a one-year extension. So we were prepared, and the day the president made the announcement, because we couldn't change unless the law itself was changed, we couldn't announce we were going to be non-compliant with the law, of course. So once the president said that states had the authority to come to a new agreement, which was extend current plans for 1 year, we chose to do that. And the same day the president made his announcement, almost immediately afterward, we announced that we're going to comply with that and extend those plans into next year.
For our listeners, you're listening to Policy Matters here on 89.9 WJCT. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937. And we're talking about healthcare policy. Jason, you just mentioned that Florida Blue has made the business decision to go ahead and to reissue those policies. That is not universal, of course. Around the country, we've seen some other states take a different approach. Some claim that this is very awkward financially and may destabilize the markets. What does that mean?
Health insurance is regulated at the state level, and the insurance commissioner of Florida has said that plans have the opportunity to extend those plans. We, of course, chose to do that. There are other states' insurance commissioners that have made different decisions and said that, no, we are not going to allow you to do that. We're going to make sure that you continue to offer the ACA compliant with those 10 minimum benefits. Each decision is going to have a different impact on the market. But here in Florida, we're able to extend those plans.
Now, Jason, of course, the individual markets are about 5%. And the 4.8 million that we're talking about canceled policies so far are from that 5% or portion of it. But if you're a listener, or if you know somebody who's had their policy canceled and they have found out that you can maybe extend this for a year, you still may be feeling very uncomfortable about your future. Why, for example, didn't the president introduce legislation that would simply say, if you like your plan, you can keep it and not limit it to a year?
The way the bill is structured, you have to get everybody into the risk pool because you have 40 to 50 million people without health insurance, most of whom are going to get coverage under this bill, and many of that group are going to get it through these new exchanges. And the only way actuarially that works is if everybody's in the risk pool with the same health plan. So they have these 10 minimum benefits package. Health insurers are required to cover everybody under the new law, regardless of health status. You can't use somebody's health conditions to set their rates. It's the risk pool in the aggregate that matters. And that only works if everybody's in the system. So the way the bill is structured, now the law, is to get everybody in. So when you have people that can exclude themselves and buy plans that are not compliant with what the chronic health condition health insured have, then that throws off the actuarial calculation and people end up paying more.
Jason, that is a very articulate explanation of the markets, but doesn't that suggest that for the Affordable Care Act to be implemented as designed, people will have to lose some of their policies? They will have to be canceled by the design of the act to accomplish what you just described.
The law says specifically that all plans must have these 10 minimum benefits package in the exchange. Everyone involved, I was in the Congress at that time, everybody understood that was the way the bill was designed. That's the way the law is currently designed. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that people are now finding out that if you don't have a plan with those 10 minimum benefits package, you're going to have to buy one or pay a penalty. And I think that the public outcry is what was misunderstood in this whole thing. I don't think people realized who supported that law 4 years ago that the public would in such a forceful way at the end of the year here make their voices heard.
If you have a question for Jason Altmaier, he is one of the nation's leading experts on healthcare policy, the Senior Vice President of Public Policy at Florida Blue, please give us a call at 549-2937, 549-2937 if you have a question for Jason Altmaier, or if you have a comment on healthcare policy. Jason, the president, of course, has a number of times been apologetic about what's happened to a number of people with regard to these plans. And in part of his explanation, he said, again, that the individual market is 5%. Many of them will be better off, quite frankly, with a lower cost, especially if they get a subsidy. But there will be those for whom it is more expensive, and he limited it to that 5%. One question that has been arising recently is when the employer mandate goes into effect next year, is there the possibility that we're going to be seeing additional people losing their plans when the employer mandate goes into effect?
The congressional budget estimates that millions of people who are currently insured through their employer will be dropped by their employer and then go into the exchange. And it's unique to each employer. They have to make their own decision. But if your costs for family coverage, which is accurate in most cases, are between $10,000 and $15,000 per employee, and you have the option to drop their coverage and pay a $2,000 per employee penalty, and you know that those employees can then go into the exchange, qualify for a subsidy, and have dozens of choices in the exchange. So they're going to pay less out of pocket and have more choices than you're able to give them, and you're going to save yourself $10,000 per employee. At that point, why would you not drop them? Yeah. I think that's the calculation
some employers are going to make. Something that may take some people by surprise, but we should be preparing for that. Jason, we have a call from Diane, and she has a question for you. Diane, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And do you have a question, question for Mr. Altmaier or a comment?
I sure do. I was one of the people that was canceled, and I quickly went ahead and signed up for the alternative plan because I didn't want to, you know, lose my whole coverage. Now that I could have extended it, am I locked into the new plan I've already signed up for?
Yeah, this is a great question, Diane. I'm glad that you asked. I don't want to get into anyone's personal circumstance on the air, but what I would encourage you and anyone in your situation, and there are a lot of people who have made that decision, contact Florida Blue through our website, or if you're local in Jacksonville, visit our retail center, which is in the town center, and we will sit down with you and walk through what your options are under the new law, because we don't want you just to make a decision based on the short term. We want you to make the best decision for you and your family over the long term, and I'd like to have the opportunity to have our people walk through with you what your options are.
Okay. Thank you.
Diane, thank you for the call. We have Chuck who has a question for you, Jason. Chuck, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a comment and a question. The comment is this. If you're going to sell a product and you oversell it, you're in trouble. And what we have with this, we had potentially, or maybe potentially the possibility where people have pre-existing conditions and who have issues. And for those circumstances, it's good. But we passed this in a Congress where not a single Republican voted for it, and President Obama repeatedly told us over and over and over again what is not true. And now you're going to have people, and had he told us this, that your policies are going to be canceled, and they're going to cost you more money, and in some cases for less coverage, and millions of people's policies are going to be canceled and changed. I have a hard time understanding how a CEO or a president or anybody in any capacity that understands anything about selling a product could have put us in this position.
Chuck, thank you for your question. And by the way, if you want to join the conversation or have a question, please give us a call at 549-2937. You know, Jason, Chuck raises something that's part of the national discussion, and it really is sort of this distinction between policy and politics. The policy you've described, but he's going to a little bit to the politics and the rollout of it, and was it oversold, and was it oversold in a way that's maybe fundamentally unfair? I think that's the question Chuck is raising. Jason?
I think there were people who supported the law that underestimated the technical glitches and the unintended consequences that could occur in the rollout. And I think that those consequences have been greater than anyone foresaw. And, I think that there is going to be a postmortem done on this process and try to figure out what were the decisions that were made that led to this rollout, which has not gone as smoothly as anyone would have liked. But that said, there's a political argument to be made. I get it that there's people on both sides. I spent a lot of time in my previous life having those types of discussions. But the fact is, it is the law. And we, as citizens of this country, should want our laws to work. And nobody in the country should be rooting for failure. And at Florida Blue, regardless of what your politics are, we are working very hard to make this law work as well as it possibly can, because that's to the benefit of the people that we serve. So I will leave it to others to make the political arguments and cast blame and point fingers. But what we're out there every day doing is trying to make sure that the people we serve have access to the healthcare system at the lowest possible cost.
But don't you think part of what Chuck's point is very briefly is that glitches are one thing in the rollout, but in selling it, there was this impression that everybody would be a winner and there would be no losers. And what we've seen in the rollout, even apart from the website issues, is that there are going to be winners and losers. And I think what Chuck is saying is, shouldn't maybe that have been a little more straightforward?
I would agree that much of the rhetoric that occurred during the passage and debate of the bill itself and in the 4 years since the law was enacted proved to be inaccurate.
We have Cliff, and Cliff, you have a comment or question for Jason Altmaier?
Yes, I do.
Welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thanks so much. And this is a great idea to do this quarterly topic on policy. My question would be, I moved to Jacksonville recently and for employment, but prior to that, I was self-employed and I had my own insurance policy in another state. And I was paying about $3,000 a year to self-insure for a catastrophic insurance policy, basically $10,000 deductible. Was only covering me if, God forbid, I got cancer or a heart attack, something like that. But for your regular doctor visits or anything else, it was all out of pocket. But my understanding was the Affordable Care Act was going to help people like me, if I was going to self-insure, to have better options at probably about the same cost to me. And I think a lot of people who got their cancellations might have been in the same boat I was. And I'm just wondering if a lot of concerns by people are saying that, well, we're going to pay more for less and winners and losers. Is that really true in most cases? Or will people be having a lot of possibly as good or better options when these old policies are canceled and the new ones that are in keeping with the Affordable Care Act stipulations are put in place?
Cliff, thank you for your question. Jason, this is where the rubber meets the road, actual policyholder.
Yeah, the caller is correct. And when you say better and more affordable options, those are two different issues. So without question, people are going to have better options because all insurers are required to have a much more generous benefits plan offered in the market in the exchanges than is currently available. That's what we're talking about. Is that going to cost less? No, of course it's not. When you add a lot of new benefits, improved pharmaceutical coverage, again, maternity care, even if you don't need it, pediatric care, even if you don't have kids, but you're paying for that, that's going to raise the cost of those plans. And with regard to the employer side, in the small employer market, and it, again, it varies based upon the size of your organization, the number of people you employ, but there's a similar exchange that exists for small employers that is caught up in the same technical issues that the individual exchange is. But for employers more generally, it depends on the size. 50 is generally the threshold as to whether or not you are required to offer insurance or not, 50 employees. And if you're required to offer insurance, you're going to have more choices in the market. You're going to have a lot of plans that have more generous options. But if you choose a more generous plan, you're going to have to pay more for it.
Well, Cliff, thank you for your question. And we have someone who's been waiting for a bit. Mike, welcome to the program. Do you have a question or comment for Jason Altmaier?
Hey there. Thanks for taking the call. I wanted to make a comment based upon the employer coverage. So this might be a little bit of a tangent, but I still think it pertains. So if an employer doesn't have to pay the benefit package and they can just take the fine, doesn't that effectively take away from the general compensation of the employee without having to be recompensated by the employer, and effectively that's just the government subsidizing the insurance industry?
The employer-provided healthcare market has grown so much, and about half of employers in the country currently offer healthcare to their employees. But the reason that health insurance generally is offered through employers for most people who have jobs is because of a tax law that was put into place in the 1950s that gave tax preference to both the individual and the employer for offering insurance. So now under the new law, when there's penalties for not offering insurance that are greatly undervalued compared to the cost of providing that insurance, a lot of employers are going to make different decisions. But either way, the individual is going to have a choice. They're either going to get their health care through the employer or they're going to get it through the exchange. And in both cases, they're going to have choices in the market. So I don't think the insurance industry per se has a benefit either way in that, because they're going to go after those individuals in the market, whether they're employed by groups or in the individual market.
Keith, thank you for your question. Jason, I will say last week in the healthcare policy conference at Jacksonville University, one of the speakers mentioned that you're going to see employers looking for an off-ramp, looking for a way to, because the costs are going up and they're unpredictable, and that many of them are going to migrate towards moving some of their employees, in fact, to the exchanges and simply paying the fine. And that may happen over time. Now, that may not be an insurance question so much as an employer question, but many believe that sort of that impetus is going to be there as we go forward.
I think without question, employers look at a lot of things when they want to attract and retain talent. They want to be good to their employees. They would love for them to have quality, affordable health insurance. What's the best way to do that? We don't assume that employers are just going to purely make that economic decision to cut people regardless of what happens to them with their insurance. But as I described earlier, if they're going to have more choices and less out-of-pocket costs than you're able to offer as an employer, and your personal business situation will be improved based upon that decision, then it seems like something a lot of employers would do.
Keith, welcome to the program. I understand you have a question or comment for Jason Altmaier.
Hello?
Hey, Jason. Hey, Keith, how are you?
Well, good. I have a whole lot of things to suggest on this thing. And it's in my opinion, it shows how ineffective Congress is these days, because while your speaker says that people knew what was going to happen, is it not true that Nancy Pelosi said she didn't know what was in the law until they passed it? Anyway.
Well, I think, Keith, you're going to that distinction I mentioned earlier between policy and politics. Jason has certainly given us a pretty good rundown on this policy, but it's a very important conversation, but you're talking about the politics of Congress and the passage of the act. Do you have a question for Mr. Altmaier on that?
Well, all right. Then I will go to, I have a friend who is a small businessman, and it was advertised that they would get a subsidy for their employees up to 35 employees. However, when he looked into the paperwork, he found out that it was going to cost him. Well, first of all, there's a sliding scale, so that the more employees you have, the less subsidy there would be. So he found out that when he figured it out, the cost of paperwork would be more than the benefit he would receive. So that was another problem. Actually, I'm so upset about the whole politics of the thing. Let me go on to the application process.
Sure. We're getting a little short on time, so if you could give your question to Mr. Altmaier, we'd appreciate that.
I know this fellow who applied, and it took him 4 hours to apply. The first question was, are you Hispanic? And I don't know if that means that then if you were, they switch you to a Spanish language thing. But then later on, the questions were, are you white? Are you black? Have you voted? I mean, that I don't know unless the illegal aliens are going to be covered by this.
Well, Keith, thank you. I'm going to turn to Mr. Altmaier and ask him a little bit about the application process itself. Would you like to comment on the application process? And
yeah.
Thank you for your
Well, this
question.
Is where, the technical glitches in the exchange occur. I don't know about some of those questions that he's asking about if you vote or not, if that's universally asked. But I do know that the issue is that there are people who just are unable to navigate the process because the website will not allow them to do that. That's what needs fixed. But the other point that he made about tax credits to offset the cost of employer-provided coverage, that's something that's already been implemented. The popular provisions were implemented first. The pre-existing condition exclusions for children and insurance companies have to now offer coverage regardless of health status. That's very popular. The tax credits were popular. Offering coverage up to age 26 on your parents' plan. The closing of the donut hole under Medicare prescription drugs, all of that has already occurred. And I think another misperception that occurred of supporters of the bill is by pushing out the really popular things first, people would grow to like this law. And what happened is they rolled out the popular provisions, public opinion didn't change, and now the things that aren't so popular are starting to be phased in, and public opinion is tanking, and it has a real effect on the politics.
Jason, thank you very much. And we have a number of people on hold calling in. I have to apologize. We're out of time for this portion of the program. Jason, you've been extraordinary. Thank you so much for being
thank
with
you,
us.
Rick.